Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Truth and Movies, a packed edition today. In from the Xbox, it's Tomb Raider. Warner Brothers' Lara Croft conversion, has it got game? Speaking of conversions, but not about a woman in the game, Mary Magdalene. We look at The Square. Extraordinary bonfire of Stockholm vanities from Force Majeure's Ruben Östlund. And shimmering sci-fi Annihilation, Alex Garland's movie of life as mutation, now destined for a small screen destination. Too many quality movies, we console ourselves with Film Club featuring Jean-Claude Van Damme's Street Fighter. Truth and Movies, a Little White Lies podcast. Hooray, everybody. Possibly the busiest ever edition of Truth and Movies in all the years we've been making it. And it features David Jenkins.
Hey there.
And Manuela Lazic.
That's me, hello.
Hi, Manuela.
Hi.
Hello to you, David. Much to discuss today, much. I'm going to start off with one or two comments from people listening. People like Ben Hunter, who saw You Were Never Really Here. After the great review we gave it here on the podcast and in the excellent Little White Lies magazine, he says, I totally agree with the 5 stars. It was brutal, but surprisingly hopeful. And he says, I've got a suggestion for Film Club, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. It's aged beautifully. I'd love to know what you think and whether you feel it deserves the harsh reviews it received upon release. I've never seen it. David?
I think I saw it on, I'm trying to remember if it was VHS or DVD. Was it 90? It was like
that,
late
was
90s.
Was that long ago? VHS?
I think it might have been a VHS rental and I didn't make it through it.
Did you not?
I wasn't au fait with the Hunter S. Thompson book, and so it didn't really make much sense
Manuel,
to me.
Manuel, have
then.
You seen it?
I have not seen it.
Okay. Where do you, this is an issue we touched on, and quite a sensitive one that we touched on last week. Where do you stand on leaving a film halfway?
When I heard you talking about this last week, I was trying to think when I did it.
Yeah.
The last film I remember walking out of was a film called Lawrence Anyways.
Oh my God.
By Xavier Dolan. But like, it wasn't because I wasn't enjoying the film. I was. The reason why is because it was in Cannes. It was in the middle of the festival in the day, and basically the soundtrack of the film is a lot of like pounding techno, and they'd had it, and he obviously asked for it to be turned up to absolute max volume. It's basically people shouting in techno for 3 hours. And I had maybe the worst headache of my entire life. And I was trying to do my absolute darndest to stay there, see this one through.
Right.
Once I've seen it, I've seen it. I can go and drink some water and like take 5,000 ibuprofen afterwards. But It broke you. It broke me and I bottled.
Aww. Okay.
Nothing against that film. And I never actually ended up catching up with it because I think the stigma of that.
It's an extremely full answer.
I wonder
what the stats are on listeners leaving podcasts halfway. I'd say really low, though.
I don't think you want to know that.
I was leaving. Manuela was actually getting up right there.
I've had enough.
It's funny because that brings to mind Tony Erdmann. You remember the much acclaimed German comedy?
Yes.
I left that halfway, but I went back the next day to see the rest of it. And the reason being that I had no idea it was that long. It's really, really long.
It is quite long.
It's like
true.
2 hours 40. Mm. And about an hour and 30 into it, because I had parking and I had something I had to go and do of a domestic nature, I went, no, we're probably there. And then I checked I realised what time it was going to finish and there was no way I could stay. But I did go back and watch the next day.
And did you like it?
Oh, yeah, I did. Well,
okay, good.
I think the second half was more what I thought the whole film was going to be.
I think that slow burn makes the second half what it is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So now you have to see it a third time.
Whoa.
All the way through.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Still, with the listeners' comments, here's S. Alexei, who's wondering if we've ever thought about doing a film club double bill. And S. Alexei suggests The Lives of Others with Goodbye Lenin. It's an interesting combination, isn't it?
Ah, kind of like German post...
Yeah, post-fall of wall. Yeah.
No, pre-wall. Pre-fall wall.
Okay.
Double bill.
They might be a bit too similar.
Do you think?
Know. Yeah.
Well, so they have come up with some other options. Double billing could be a good format going forward if you want to compare past films dealing with the same periods of history. Because you often get two films coming out at the same time, same plot.
Yeah.
So Armageddon, Deep Impact, although S. Alexei says, please don't do those. I actually enjoyed both of these. Or adaptations of works by an author like Capote and Infamous.
I kind of think, though, that as with today, just because we're going to be dealing with the cinematic film Street Fighter doesn't mean that we won't then have opportunity to talk about such other films as Mortal Kombat.
It's surely a future Brothers. Film club.
I mean, it's, yeah, obviously, it's like we've got to save ourselves, really.
Yeah. Right up there with the emoji movie, I should think. Jack Olson was prompted by a discussion of The Shape of Water to ask whether you can really appreciate, critic people, a movie on its own without comparing it to a bazillion other films you've already seen. Isn't there a disconnect, suggests Jack, between people like you and the average moviegoer? And you know what my fingers are doing around that. If you were, says Jack, an 18-year-old taking his or her date to a movie, would you enjoy it?
Well, I don't think our jobs as film critics is to compare plot lines. I don't think that's what we're about.
Mm.
I think we are just looking for films that, you know, we're not looking for films as if we're looking for new plot lines all the time. That's not what it's about.
But I don't think Jack mentioned plot lines. I think the fact that it was sparked by The Shape of Water...
Comparing it to a bazillion other films, like that's not what we're doing. We're looking at each film and trying to see if they have value as art or as entertainment. And I think that's the problem with cinema, is that it's both. It's both art and entertainment. So obviously, if you want to go on a date and you're 18, then maybe try and see a film that's more about entertaining than art, unless you are a cinema aficionado and you want to do that.
I think sometimes when you do reach for a comparison with another film, it's usually if you like something and you want to kind of find some simple shorthand to sort of sell it to someone quickly.
Exactly, yeah.
So like,
yeah, of course, but then...
But when I think when we're doing like criticism, you wouldn't want to go too heavy on the kind of it's X, Y, Z. You don't ever want it to be about what films you've seen, you know?
Because
I think a lot of critics, when they talk about film, it's about them rather than the film in the end.
I don't know.
It's a complex subject.
No, it is.
I mean, the question is, can you appreciate a movie on its own? Like, of course we can. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. But we try to.
There is a risk that people who see films all the time, and sometimes many films in the same day, won't experience a movie in the same way that somebody who goes along on a Saturday night, and therefore what they say about the film won't necessarily be that reliable a source of whether an 18-year-old on a date will have a good time. But there you go. I guess that's just one of those things.
It's
the most subjective thing out there, I think, possibly film criticism.
I think also when you're a place like Cannes, that's when it happens. Because when you're seeing like four or five films a day, you start to compare the... like,
and also the whole film on the same day without a chance to go out and watch it the next day.
Exactly.
Yeah. Which I really value. If you would like to get in touch so we can be befuddled by your comment, truthandmovies@tcolondon.com is the email address, @LWLies on Twitter. There's Facebook, and also
the wall,
is that what it's called?
The
wall of
the
truth
wall.
Okay, well, it's there anyway. Right, we've got loads of films to talk about, the first of which is Tomb Raider. Lara Croft, fiercely independent daughter of a missing adventurer, must push herself beyond her limits when she finds herself on the island where her father disappeared. Here is Lara coming over Aldora.
I think I know where they went. Our dads.
To the bottom of the sea?
They were headed to an uninhabited island. Somewhere off the coast of Japan. It used to be called Yamatai.
There's at least 6,000 islands off the coast of Japan. Hardly any of them are populated.
Well, I have a map. Now all I need to do is to figure out what these are. I think these are coordinates. The location.
They're clock hands.
They're not clock hands. people in the clock hands there. They are clock hands. That's the one.
That's right in the middle of the Devil's Sea. You might as well tie a stone to your foot and jump off the boat now.
It'll be an adventure.
Death is not an adventure.
Manuela and David, you've seen this. I haven't, and I'm really jealous. On a scale of 1 to 10, where 10 is a fun romp, and nearly is a drab, depressing marketing cash-in thing, where does this one stand, Manuela?
I would say 7. Yeah, but it's well, you have to calculate throughout the film.
Yeah.
Because I think it gets to 7.
Is it a kind of J-curve?
It's more... starts at 2 and reaches 7 in the last 45 minutes,
okay.
Maybe. So yeah. It's not too bad, but it does take its time to get there, I think.
What kind of graph are you looking at?
I'm looking at a 7, and at its best points, 8.
Oh.
But I would say less of the J curve, actually. I was like I was with it for the long haul. There's a few spots of cheese in there, a few nuggets, but like
there
nothing...
If I take my 18-year-old date to this, are they going to enjoy it on Saturday?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
certainly.
Maybe.
You can make out during the first bit and then you can watch the action. Yeah.
So one of the reasons I'm excited about this, apart from my obvious love of the character, is the cast that they put together, which, I mean, it's only a small indication, but I thought, well, there's this quality there. You've got, well, Alicia Vikander, Dominic West, one of two films he's in this week, Walter Goggins, who I enjoyed hugely in The Hateful Eight, Chris and Scott Thomas, Derek Jacobi, proper thesp action.
Quite
there.
Funny.
That's very funny when Derek Jacobi just turns up as a kind of like pen pusher.
Mm.
Like, he's not really got a character in the film, but that almost makes it even better.
Yeah, he doesn't need one.
Yeah.
He's Derek Jacobi.
He's Derek Jacobi.
That's fine. Okay, it's not a film necessarily that you would approach with the same critical parameters that, say, The Square would require.
I mean, you're sitting down and you're watching and you're trying to figure out if you like it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the basis of it.
Did you? So overall then, in the end, you liked it?
Yeah, in the end, I really found it, it did some interesting things. And even before, so basically, I think it's called Tomb Raider for a reason, because she's about raiding tombs. And it gets really good when she's actually doing that.
Yeah.
But the thing is that it takes some time to get there. But even then, like even before that, there are some nice moments. So for instance, she's the young contemporary kind of, I don't want to say woke because it's bad, but she's like a girl of today, you know? And so she lives in London and she is seen going to the restaurant where she works as a delivery woman on Brick Lane. So it's really nice to see just London of today in the film.
Okay.
And she has this amazing bike race across whereabouts is it?
It's around like East London. Do
they stay in East London? Or do they magically kind
No, do you know what was interesting?
I think
one of there is actually a bit of a fluency to like, it's not just like, oh, they're going by Shoreditch High Street Station and now they're in like Wembley.
Exactly.
Fast and Furious 6. Yeah. Although they're very fast cars, of course. All right, now here's another question. I'm not sure if you've played through to the end the recent reboot of Tomb Raider, which this movie is very much based on, I think, came out a couple of years back. So maybe you can't answer this question. If you've played that game, have you not effectively already seen this film? Will you still be able to enjoy the movie?
I can't answer that.
I don't think it's the same story at all. I think it's similar to the game in terms of what her character is able to do and what she's about. But I don't think it's the story. I think that's the thing with films based on video games that often, I mean, this is about ethics in game journalism, but often with films based on video games is that the pleasure is the action and not so much the story, but they can still tell a story in the video game. And so many video games have interesting stories. But I think with the film, they try to, you know, stick to the legend of her looking for, like having this dad and being all about tomb raiding and stuff. But the story itself is a bit simple and there's not much mystery there.
It felt for me like a very rare example of a kind of action movie where you've got a hero who's very human. Like, it's a really, really thin line that they tread, and they do it so well in that you constantly feel that she might die.
Oh, yeah, really? So there is actually... Yeah.
And there is a feeling of, like, she's not just going to do this superhuman thing and save herself.
She doesn't have, like, 5 lives.
The way she gets out of these scrapes, they're very fumbling. There's no like finesse to it. Like they're very kind of just like, I've got to do whatever I need to do to get past this next thing. And it was not a superhero movie. Yeah. I mean, you know, you might sort of see it as a kind of origin story because it does like tee itself up for a sequel.
Right, does it, yeah.
But it's not, because she is more of a kind of a character and a person.
Yeah.
It seems weird to be saying this about a computer game movie, but that, you know, they've obviously thought a lot hard about, let's try and like couch this in some kind of reality, even though there is a kind of the fantastical element that is kind of buried deep in the tomb. There is a kind of realistic element to that as well. There's no magic, and there's no kind of, it's not like the mummy.
Yeah.
You saw the mummy, didn't you?
Exactly.
Yeah. And Tom Cruise.
Oh yeah.
It's the anti-mummy. It's okay. very it's that.
So it's the auntie the, or the mummy, which would
the anti-mummy, sorry, very good.
So tell me, the director is the Norwegian Roar Utag, who has done what previously, Manuela?
He's done a film called The Wave. Okay. Which I haven't seen, but I've heard it's pretty good.
Okay.
It's like a thriller.
Good. Mm. And this is a top recommendation by the sound of it from you guys.
I was surprised. I was not going into this with very high expectations at all. Very bizarre, actually, that at the time of seeing, it had already been released in, I think, India.
Uh-huh.
And that you could actually see on Rotten Tomatoes, there were a lot of reviews from Indian newspapers.
And how did they feel about it?
And they were all extreme negative reviews.
Really?
Oh.
That added to my kind of...
Well, I guess the other thing was that it's actually out this... Well, we're recording this on Wednesday and it's out this evening on advance. And your screening wasn't until the day before, which is usually a little bit of a warning sign in terms of what the studio think it's going to do with the critics. The later the review or even in most extreme cases, an absence of review indicate, oh my God, this is a turkey, let's quickly get it out before anyone has a chance to say anything.
No, I think they've totally botched it. They should have been screening this... well in advance. I mean, it's really good, and I think it got really good positive word of mouth.
Give it some numbers then, David, do.
My anticipation was maybe on the 1-2 axis.
Mm.
Very low. As I'm also not a massive Alicia Vikander fan. I had a really...
What's your objection to Alicia?
She picks a lot of very bad films, and I just don't think
she was in the Danish Girl.
The Danish Girl was very bad. She's just
what else
she very had? Kind of braying and
really?
Actory. And yeah, just... But I know there's a film you like with her in it anyway.
Which film's that?
No, it's more complicated than that. I don't like the film that much, but I think she's amazing. And it's called The Light Between Oceans.
Oh, right, yeah.
She made it with Fassbender. Mm. And I think she's... The film is very average, but... She is so alive in that film. And I think about this film all the time. And I saw it 2 years ago. I think about this movie like once every 2 weeks at least.
Okay.
It's crazy.
So I'd go 4 for enjoyment because I had a romping good time.
Lucky you.
And I would probably say 3 for in retrospect because I mean... I feel
a bit bad about it, don't you? It's like eating
it's self-hating.
Fast food and you it's feel like cheap.
It's eating an entire chocolate orange and just...
It's that good.
I'm not entirely sure that.
All right.
I'm not
but
sure.
You have
I need
a
to
good
see it
time
again.
When you watch it.
Good time you watch it. Don't need to see it again. But excited for the sequel.
Yeah.
Aww.
She's got two guns.
She's got two guns.
Damn. She packs heat. All right, Manuela.
Anticipation. I would say 1 or 2 as well. I didn't have high expectations, except for Vikander. I love her so much, but you know, I don't want her to fall into the franchise trap, so but I think she's going to be okay. Enjoyment, I would say first 3 and then 4 because okay. I think it really picks up once she's in the tomb.
And how excited are you for these sequels?
I think it could be really fun because they kind of started establishing some things as well that don't get explored too much, but I'm not going to spoil it here. But I'm excited, and hopefully they will learn some lessons from that one, which is get in the tomb fast.
Yeah, stop that.
Don't care about dad.
Okay, video game conversion. For some reason, I moved to mention at this point Ready Player One, which is not strictly a video game conversion, but obviously is massively concerned with video gamery. When is that out?
I think it's out in a couple of weeks.
Right, and so first preview is coming up next Monday. I'm really looking forward to seeing that and also hearing what you guys think.
I'm not sure about it, to be honest. The trailers...
A lot of people are down on the trailers.
Yeah.
But it's Spielberg sci-fi, you know?
It played at South by Southwest, which is a festival in Austin. It had a kind of secret world premiere there.
Mm.
And it seemed to go down really well. So, you know, don't doubt the beard is the moral of that story.
Very much so, yeah. Excellent. But that was Tomb Raider. Next up, The Square. Next up, the square. Christian is a prestigious Stockholm Museum's chief art curator who finds himself in both professional and personal crises as he attempts to set up a controversial new exhibit. Here's a particularly choice scene in which Christian, played by Klaus Bang, and Elizabeth Moss meet in a gallery and attempt to have a very awkward conversation in between the noise of a couple of installations.
How often would you say that you take women that you don't know very well and have sex with them and be inside them?
I'm not sure, baby.
Do you not remember them?
Yeah, sure, I do, yeah.
You know their names?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Mm, sure, yeah.
Always?
Always, yeah.
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 So what's my name?
I know your name.
Okay, then good. What is it?
I'm not going to go into this with you. This is stupid.
Mm-mm. Anyone that would know somebody's name would just say, of course I know your name. Name?
I know your name.
What is it?
Anne.
Okay.
Probably loses a lot without the visuals, but that for me was a particularly choice example of why this film was so entertaining. As I say, you probably need the pictures to go with it. But Ruben Östlund, who did Force Majeure, you will recall the drama about the evolving dynamics that follow a family's individual decisions when an avalanche hits them, or appears to, won the Palme d'Or for this in Cannes. And do you feel that's a good decision, David?
You've already said you found it really, that you described that scene as exciting, and you know the last thing I want to do is like kill your buzz. But I can honestly say I hated this film.
Oh wow!
Like with a kind of a fiery intensity.
See, from the first scene, I was already enjoying it. The first scene is he's awoken and shepherded in to do an interview, and he's as bewildered and has as little idea of what's going on as the viewer at that point. And I just enjoyed the way. And from that moment on, there's just a lot of very well observed lines, and the way that I think Östlund sets everything up, he kind of treads that fine line of irony and satire of people's vanity and
you say that first scene though. Let me just mention, so like this,
okay.
You have this opening scene where Klaus Bang's character is being interviewed, and he's this wannabe high-minded pretentious gallery owner. He's being interviewed by a journalist played by Elizabeth Moss, and in his answers that he delivers to her questions, he kind of highlights the absurdity of his view of the art world. And, you know, it's kind of very pretentious and very, very over the top and very disconnected from what actual normal people are interested in.
I think it's exactly the kind of conversation that someone would have in a gallery, though.
Exactly. No, I don't disagree with that. And it's very much a front for his own intellect. You know, you get this point about, oh, aren't people in the art world quite sort of disconnected and pretentious? And then the film goes on for like 2.5 hours. And it's almost as long as... My feeling was the film says everything it has to say in that first scene and then says it again 50,000 times.
Manuela, can I just leap in at this point?
Yes.
Okay, so that first scene I really, really liked. And I found everything in this film, certainly until the last half hour, to be both very naturalistic and also very keenly judged, superbly satirical in the subtlety with which Östlund makes his points. There are a lot of very sly little digs. But I think the reason that he does go on at such length is he's not just satirising art. He's satirising everybody. There's a continual kind of parade and a really nicely, really well-juggled carousel of characters who come through, some from the art world, some just from any other walk of life, and they disappear from the story and then they come back in again. And all the time, Östlund's gently, I think, highlighting their kind of awkwardness and their at times their vanity. I know we said we weren't comparing it to things, but at times it reminded me almost like a kind of a sexy Swedish version of 2012. Do you remember that mockumentary about the build up to the London Olympics? Just in the terms of the way of an office being run by a man and the various scenarios that develop. But as I say, a much a 2012 about sexy, successful Swedish people. So I just sat there from the first scene, and I really wasn't expecting this, with a broad grin on my face. And it really wasn't until the last half hour that wore off at all. Mm. Manuela.
I definitely think it's too long. So let's put it on the table. I think it could have been so much shorter, because it's true. It does make its point, its key point, in the opening scene. But I think the rest of the film is all about exploring the implications of that point, which is the art world. You know, art is supposed to be something that opens the mind and makes your life better and makes you see life differently. But it is technically, realistically, reserved for the elite. So what happens if we try and open it to people? And does it help the elite to see poorer people better? And then the film exposed that question. And it's not an easy question. So I understand that it takes 2 hours and a half. But I think, yeah, like, you see the character of Klas Bang dealing with that at the scale of his installation that he's presenting, which is the square itself, which is the square where if people step in it, it's a zone of, how do we explain it? It's a zone of total trust in each other. So everyone is equal in the square. But obviously, that's supposedly what a museum could be, you know, a free museum where everyone can go and see the art and learn something and get, you know, their spiritual lives enriched. But the reality is not that. And then in Klas Bang's life, that dilemma develops in so many insane ways. So that's why, like, I agree that it's, like, really realistic, but it's also so far-fetched. Mm. Like, some really random stuff happens to him, but the way he deals with it is really realistic. And the way it puts him in really awkward positions is super realistic. So it's not always like a pleasant watch, but it's often really funny.
Oh, yeah.
But ultimately, it's really uncomfortable.
I think more than 2012, as I mentioned before, Bonfire of the Vanities, which wasn't a successful film at all, but in terms of the dynamic of taking somebody from one class and making them take a wrong turn and then seeing how that develops and how that then juxtaposes their own idea of themselves with the way they behave. One of the key things, and right from the start of this film, is the notion of help.
Yeah.
People asking for help, do you give it? And that certainly seems to be something that he's trying to explore here. And I guess that ties in with Force Majeure, which isn't otherwise obviously a film with many connections to this. That notion of the responsibility of people. He actually says the bystander effect. This was Austin's quote. The reason we don't have the ability to take responsibility in situations, we're thinking, don't take me, take someone else, which I think does tie in a bit with Force Majeure. Did you like Force Majeure?
I liked it more than this, but still didn't find it very credible. I think that all his films, for me, seem like an idea.
Mm.
He's come up with the idea first and then retrofitted, like, a drama around it.
I think he definitely has, but that doesn't have to be a bad thing.
I mean, maybe it's not a bad thing, but for me, it just doesn't work at all. Mm. I mean, and this one was just... It took all the things I didn't like about Force Majeure and just amplified it.
Mm. I think it's pretty indulgent in some ways, like the way he exposed some things. For instance, with the ape-like performance artist, I think it's amazing. I think it's a great scene, but I can understand that it can be taken as insanely indulgent and a bit obvious because it's obvious.
I mean, it might be worth adding that they're like, just to give a bit of plot.
Oh yeah, mm-hmm.
Just to contextualise some of the things that have been said. Like, there is this sort of central conceit at the beginning of the film where.
Well, that's actually quite a spoiler, if you say, I think, what happens at the start of the film.
Okay, well, there is an incident which triggers his onward journey, shall we say.
Yeah.
This is a kind of, almost like a kind of subplot that exists outside of his work in the gallery, which is kind of working concurrently. And for me, this subplot was so stupid, so lazy, was so idiotic, was so far-fetched. You said far-fetched yourselves.
Yeah, I did.
That there was just not a second that I could fathom that this would go ahead, that this character in this position would be Adam Sandler level dumb.
Whoa.
In his, like, sorry, I mean that in his, not the real Adam Sandler, because I'm sure Adam, real Adam Sandler.
Oh, that's not what I'm saying. Whoa.
Okay, Billy Madison, Waterboy level, dull, like, stupid. Like, you know, he just makes this decision which is so idiotic and obviously poor that for the entire film, I just could not contend with how could this guy in this position choose to do this thing. I mean,
well, you know why? It's because he has the sense of righteousness.
I know. Maybe that's, but maybe that's the problem.
You're too good.
It just prevented me from appreciating the film, and I just think that Ruben Östlund is a horrible cynic. He just hates everything and everyone, and everything's awful.
That's why I enjoyed this movie.
We want to kill each other. We want to hurt each other. We don't understand each other.
Did you like the kid in the 7-Eleven at least? I thought he was amazing.
Oh, his performance is great.
Yeah.
In terms of stories, I don't know. I don't know if it's my favorite bit.
Okay. So, well, I'm going to say that I wasn't expecting anything good from this film at all. Well, actually, no, the trailer is...
Come on, Palme d'Or winner.
Yeah, won the... Well, yeah, but...
I'm kidding,
Actually, this is maybe relevant. Did you enjoy the trailer? When you saw the trailer for this, did you think that looks interesting, or did you think, dear?
Well, I originally saw it in Cannes,
Before the trailer. Sorry. Okay. So, now, the trailer, the notion of a film about a curator at a Stockholm gallery getting embroiled in things and controversy for a new exhibit, not necessarily something that would light my fire particularly, but I thought the trailer looked entertaining, so I'd say maybe 3 going in. I'm bordering on a 5 here for much of it. The last half hour, lost it a little bit, but I'd give it a solid 4 at the time and certainly afterwards, and I've been recommending it to people.
Good.
I've been doing that.
Can you tell them it was 2.5 hours long?
Yeah.
You just want them to be ready so that they don't have their car parked.
They don't have to stay for the last half hour.
Take
the ticket.
Yeah. Take more money for the meeting.
Yeah.
What do you think, Manuela?
Anticipation, I really didn't have anything to expect. I hadn't seen Force Majeure and still haven't seen Force Majeure, so I didn't know. Actually, it was, I remember in Cannes, I saw that film quite late in the festival because Davey was telling me it's horrible. And Sophie was telling me it was really good. So
Sophie liked
it. Yeah, she loved it at the time anyway. I think she still does.
Yeah.
And the majority said it was good. So I went and I was like, well, there you go. But okay. So anticipation, probably 2-3. Enjoyment, I would say 4, because I think it is a bit long and it's a bit, but strong 4. Like, I was like, this is a director who knows what he's doing. And that's.
I thought,
enough sometimes.
The framing, I mean, the cinematography is
I think the cinematography
beautiful.
Is great. And the sound was really good as well. Mm. There's some really immersive sound design. And Klaus Bang. We need to talk about Klaus Bang.
Let's talk about
he's
him.
He's wonderful. Mm. So he's the lead actor. And apparently he's quite, he's a theater actor in this country. And so he was quite famous in that sphere. But now he's exploding.
Because I looked at his previous stuff thinking he must have been in loads. But no, he's been a bit of Borgen and kind of Scando Noir stuff. But he reminded me of a kind of...
international career, I think. I think he has been... I read an interview where he said he got so many offers for really, really big American films. Like kind of Bond level stuff. So,
yeah.
So
I'm not surprised. Yeah. I thought he was quite magnetic in this, and so does Elizabeth Moss. Mm. He reminded me a little bit of Gabriel Byrne. Do you have a kind of Scandinavian Gabriel Byrne?
I don't know what that is.
That's a reach. That's a reach, I think. I wouldn't have made that connection. I'm thinking of Gabriel Byrne in, like, Miller's Crossing.
Yeah, or in Treatment?
Klaus Bang seems more kind of obviously, like, I can imagine him doing, like, modelling for like, M&S or something. Mm.
He's really beautiful as well.
Anyway.
Do you want my scores?
Yeah, come on.
Just to
give it a nil, David. Come
in
on.
In retrospect, I would say 4. Sorry.
Oh, yeah?
Sorry. I probably had 3 anticipation because I didn't love Force Majeure, but I thought, this could be...
I wasn't crazy about Force Majeure either, but I thought it was interesting.
Force Majeure.
And this, I probably 1 for enjoyment and 1 in retrospect. I just hated it. Just really hated it.
What did you say, sorry?
I just said Force Minor because you said you didn't enjoy it.
Oh, right, sorry. Force Minor, right. I thought you were saying like Force My Score or something like that.
No, that's a bad joke. All right. My joke was better.
So, there you go then. So see it or don't.
It's the pits.
Sometimes we tell you have to see it.
Yeah.
And if you don't, then... It's legal.
I have to say that for most of this film, it's one of the films I've enjoyed most of. I love all that kind of awkward.
But do you know what? I think this is exactly what Ruben Östlund wants.
Right.
He wants people to go and love it and hate it and have an argument about it. I think, maybe it's a success on that
It's
front.
Like that thick yeasty spread you put on bread. What is it called again?
Bovril?
Yeah, that's the one. So, hey, let's move on then from the controversial square to Mary Magdalene. Mary Magdalene, Peter, played by Chiwetel Ejiofor, and Mary Magdalene, played by Rooney Mara, discuss upcoming events in the biblical story.
Did he say what he thought?
I think it was a vision of what's to come.
The kingdom. We need to gather more people. Jerusalem. Passover. That is where he'll begin it.
How?
I didn't question him.
I think he's afraid to go. He's afraid of what God might ask of him next.
A rabbi fears nothing.
I'm glad for his humility.
How are you?
So what is the angle then? Because there have been some contemporary Christ movies or biblical flicks. They generally have, whether it's a kind of a full-on gore Passion of the Christ type approach, or they generally have some shtick at play. What is it that has made the Weinstein Company, of all people, produce this fresh take on the Mary Magdalene story?
Well, I think the idea was to have a sort of feminist angle on the story, because it focuses on Mary Magdalene and on what supposedly actually happened and what she actually did, because there's this idea that she was a prostitute, and the film makes it very clear that she just was not at all. And she was simply a woman who found faith in this prophet and decided to follow him. And at first it wasn't easy because other people were wondering why she was following him. But that's not even the key of the story. It's not like, oh, are you in love with him? It's not that. It's just, why is she leaving her family? Why is she following this weird path, because like she's supposed to get married, you know, what's that? She's not doing what a woman is supposed to do. So that's, I think that's the idea, to have a sort of feminist angle, and also to probably to just retell this story in a more contemporary cinematic way with really talented actors like Joaquin Phoenix.
And who plays Jesus.
Yeah.
The big man.
Yeah.
The big guy.
Yeah. The big guy.
And how is he at JC?
He's pretty good. I mean, I think the issue with this film actually is to do with that dynamic where, on one hand, it wants to be like, let's tell this story from this fresh vantage from the female perspective, because, you know, as she's going through her trial, she also is oppressed for being a woman mm-hmm. by the disciples who are, you know, turn out to be rampant misogynists.
Yep.
But the issue is that instead of actually trying to mine for some kind of, you know, insight into how this story could have be about the experience of being a woman at this time, it basically just shows the Jesus story, and then occasionally you see her like wandering, looking at the Jesus story happening. Mm. It's basically like it's from her perspective rather than being about her.
But it's still the same events.
Yeah, it's the same events. I mean, and so you're actually in this bind where you're thinking, Jesus, quite interesting. I kind of wish I was with him more rather than what with the woman who's watching him be interesting.
Yeah, when you think about it that way, it's really disappointing because, for instance, you often see Joaquin Phoenix, or Jesus, suddenly wandering off, and his disciples are like, what's going on? I guess we have to follow him. And she's always the one who sees him going off at first. And so she's like, we have to follow him. What are you doing, guys? And they're all like, I don't know. And she's like, we have to follow him. So it's like we never understand why Jesus is doing anything that he's doing. But we understand that she wants to follow him, whatever he does. So, I mean, that's an insight, but it's not super interesting. Huh. Whereas if you make a movie about him and about his faith and his experience with God, I guess obviously that's a different project, but that would be more interesting.
But interesting what you said before about how it sounds like a cult, because Joaquin Phoenix actually does look a bit like a kind of Charles Manson.
Like a Mary Magdalene Marcy May, you might
call it. Yeah, no, indeed, very good.
Well, he was in The Master, and now he is The Master.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, nice. And he and Rooney Mara started dating, confusingly, during the production of this film.
Yeah.
I know, that is quite
the
crazy.
Pool of faith. Yeah.
But
faith right there.
At the beginning, you sort of asked the question about what's the reason for doing this. I can honestly say I've got no idea. Like, I mean, and that's probably
part... I was being very generous with my feminist angle.
Well, there's a religious context and a religious market, I guess, for this, but it's not... You don't think it's particularly aimed, or it won't find an audience beyond that?
That's the thing. I think that successful religious films, especially, or faith-based movies, as they call them in America, they're generally successful because they're kind of giving a very pro-God message. Like, they deliver the message why you need to be Christian or why you need to be this, because if you're an unbeliever, this is what will happen to you.
Right.
Whereas this film is very, very objective, and it's very sort of careful, and it's trying to be an art movie, but with these big stars in it, and it just has no kind of dynamism. It's just never does anything interesting, and it's you're waiting for something to happen that just never does. It's just a bit, in the end, it's just a bit of a kind of arty dirge, and it's not even arty in a way.
Yeah. Oh, the alternative, like, I think a Bible movie is either about believing, or it's a biblical epic, right? Where it's like really intense scenes, like violence and insane moments of miracles, you know. And there are some miracles here, actually, but they are played as kind of as if you were seeing a miracle in real life, which is just something that happens and that doesn't have an explanation. It's not like built up. So Joaquin actually resuscitates someone being called Joaquin Phoenix. So that happens.
Phoenix, right? Yeah, from
the She actually leaned over in the film and said to me, "That's why she's called Joaquin Phoenix."
Right,
I'm not sorry,
and I'm not joking. Yeah. That was easily the highlight of the film.
Well, imagine if he'd done that bit like on water, he would have been walking on water.
Oh my god, they missed a trick there.
It really
beat me
did.
To it. So anyway,
the sequel,
it's
maybe.
Not a great film.
Is it set up for no? Okay. Although, actually, yes.
But that's the thing. I mean, like, you know, they also choose to tell the chunk of story that everyone already knows.
Yeah.
Right. So it's like you're kind of thinking, you know, I mean, obviously, like, source materials and whatnot. Because, I mean, this idea that she wasn't a prostitute comes up in a subtitle at the end saying, based on new confirmed findings in the Vatican. So it's very like, you know, we're not just making this up, guys. Yeah.
But it's not just opportunistic.
But yeah, it's a bit of a failure, really, especially because, you know, it's massive talent involved.
Yeah, and totally. I think Joaquin is really good.
I mean, he's very magnetic in the film, but, you know, he's barely in it. I mean, as I say, the sort of Pontius Pilate and whipping and stuff just isn't there.
Yeah. Is it not? Give it some digits and we'll move on.
Anticipation, one. Because the director is Garth Davis, who made Lion, which I did not like at all.
Top of the Lake as well, which...
Oh, I haven't seen that
No,
yet.
It got a lot of...
Oh, did he do the new one?
I don't know if he did the second one.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, so I did not like Lion, so I was not excited for a Jesus movie from him. Then Enjoyment, one or two as well. It's long, it's 2 hours. Oh. We've decided we talk about length now, so I'm going to talk about length every time.
Yeah, absolutely. You wouldn't and, buy a sofa without knowing if you could fit it in your front room.
And Retrospect, one or two. I think a better Jesus movie would be Pier Paolo Pasolini's The Gospel According to St. Matthew.
Okay.
That is
that's
a terrific
amazing.
Movie.
Yeah?
It's the
that's
best
amazing.
Movie.
Okay.
So, twos from me across
twos.
The board.
Let's move on then. Next up, it's Annihilation. Annihilation. This is based on Jeff Vandermeer's best-selling Southern Reach trilogy, or at least the first book of it, and it follows a group of female scientists in their increasingly tense mission into a stretch of wilderness transformed by the arrival of a meteorite from which almost no man comes out alive. Now, this movie has been talked about for a while and quite keenly anticipated, but all of a sudden, whilst it is on release in the States, not doing very well, I don't think, it's been dropped on Netflix. The cinematic release isn't going to happen in Europe. It's just been put straight onto Netflix, which is kind of a surprise, and one that I don't think Alex Garland, the writer and director, is desperately keen on. I mean, he says, it is what it is, but we made the film for cinema. I've got no problem with a small screen. He loved the Handmaid's Tale. I think there's incredible potential within that context. But if you make it for TV, you think of it in those terms and you design it for TV. This we designed for the big screen. And it is visually quite an epic film, Manuela.
Yeah, the second I pressed play, the second I started watching it, I immediately felt so sad that I couldn't see this on the big screen. Because whatever you think of the film, you know, story and stuff, it is definitely a very visual movie. And it does very interesting things with the visuals for science fiction films, I think, because it is all about this sort of weird zone that appears on Earth where everything is a bit different inside, and it is sort of this sort of blob that forms, and it has
the shimmer, they call it the shimmer,
and it has really crazy colors, and it is, I think, stylistically it is a very bold choice, because basically what it does is that it kind of refracts light, and so it's all the colors of the rainbow. So that could look really tacky, but they managed to make it look really, really good. And watching that on your TV when it's buffering every 20 minutes is not helping. So that is really sad.
On the stylistic front, I was disappointed that they're still going with the, what do you call it, anamorphic lens flares all the time. We're going stylish here, everyone. So interesting visuals. A great cast as well. Natalie Portman, Jennifer Jason Leigh, Gina Rodriguez, Tessa Thompson, Oscar Isaac, and is it Tuva Novotny as Cass? I wasn't familiar with her work, but she's one of the party. What did you think, David?
I totally agree that I think that it's a real shame to have not seen this in the cinema. There's especially, like, so I mean, the story is these five women are kind of, through a sort of confluence of events, are sort of sent into the shimmer, or maybe they choose to go themselves. And it is this kind of weird zone where nothing goes in and nothing comes out. And they each have a kind of determination to find something in this place and to get out and tell the world what's happening, because it's the annihilation refers to the fact that this zone is slowly expanding and it will kind of encompass the world sooner or later. And I thought, yeah, visually it is pretty spectacular, and I think that there are certain scenes within it that I was really sad that I wasn't seeing in a cinema, with that feeling of being kind of trapped in a row, because
still good to watch on the small screen.
Oh no, it's great, but actually
the sound is terrible on Netflix.
Yeah,
I had to change the sound all the time as well.
There's a scene that's very similar to the kind of, do you remember the first big T-Rex scene in Jurassic Park where it attacks the cars? Mm-hmm. I remember seeing that when I was young and just being absolutely like stiff with fear, and there was a scene in this that was very similar. It was very kind of like there's a big bad monster in the room and everyone's having to like stand still and wonder if it's going to kind of get them.
But in terms of like the film itself, I think it's definitely really good. There are moments in it that I think are not as successful as the others, but generally the story is really, It's good sci-fi, basically. I think sci-fi can sometimes be a bit lazy, or can be a bit relying on, you know, tropes that have been used a lot, or just copying over better films. Like, so many films have copied Alien, but this one doesn't. So yeah, I think it's really original. It's full of original ideas. It's deeply sad as well, so be mindful of that when you want to Netflix and chill. But it's also full of great performances. My favorite, obviously, is Oscar Isaac. So I had been told he was barely in it. It's not true. There's a lot of Oscar Isaac in it, and it's wonderful. And he plays the husband of Natalie Portman, and he's very important to the story. He's deeply involved with the situation with that thing that's appeared. And their relationship is key, and his work, because he's also a scientist, he's a military guy, he's also really important, and he does terrific work. And he looks great.
Okay. Stylish, very creepy, this film.
Yes.
Alex Garland's films tend to be, I think they're all sci-fi, no? Or maybe The Beach wasn't. I mean, this is, I think, his second directorial outing, but he's written and had a large part in Sunshine and The Beach, as I mentioned.
Dread.
Oh, I'd forgotten about Dread. 28 Days Later, which I really enjoyed. I had the sensation sometimes that it thinks it's saying more than it is.
Yeah, me too.
And the questions, I guess, is exploring is, what is the nature of destruction, and when does mutation actually represent new life, and the evolving nature of cells? And that's certainly something that they touch on with the opening lines of the opening lines of the film about how life began on Earth. So he's a man who comes across and or has some very interesting ideas. So I enjoyed the film. It's lengthwise, what is it? It's about 2 hours?
It was fine.
Slightly under, yeah.
I had an issue with it, and it was, I kind of read the whole kind of situation as more, like, there was a sort of metaphorical element as well of the, you know, these women going in there, and you find out their backstories, and it kind of adds up to, you kind of find out why they're there. It turns this, the shimmer area, into quite a big kind of metaphor with a capital M. I almost thought that the characters had too much story to them, and there was too much effort spent trying to give them a reason to be there.
Mm.
And that stopped the overall effect of what the shimmer means from actually being that impactful.
Okay.
Mm. You know, if you see the film as being about maybe depression, or like, you know, and the fact that it kind of is this thing that you can't comprehend.
Well, that's interesting, Reed. Not
only when you're inside it, and you know, it's kind of, it just refracts these feelings around
you, takes everything into
exactly. Mm. And it reminded me a lot of Under the Skin as well.
Okay, right. Yeah.
In that, I think stylistically, it's doing more things in that kind of almost realist sci-fi than very. Although
Under the Skin is more artful, like art cinema style,
and yeah.
It's less linear.
Yeah,
yeah,
I would say
that's a very interesting read. Overall, though, I mean, it's not perfect, but a very enjoyable. My one issue with the film, I guess, was the book ending with the. There's a couple of scenes, there's a ongoing scene set at a different time, which bookends and the movie's interspersed with, which I found a bit deflating. And the stunning climax to the film isn't helped by that,
terrific.
But visually, the climax, I mean, probably shouldn't say any more than that. But,
yeah, there's a really good payoff basically at the end. Very, very. To me, it was very kind of. It felt like an experimental movie. Experimental, like it was, but not in the sense that it's abstract. You don't know what it means, but as in, it's really going for it,
and it's
very creepy,
but completely unpredictable as
well. Yeah, completely unpredictable.
Like you're watching it not through. You know, you're not scared. I think you're almost like. I've got to find out what all this means. Yeah. I've got to keep watching and see why these things are doing this.
Exactly. Kind of. It's when sci-fi is good. That's what it does.
All right. What are you going to give it?
Anticipation, I would say 3, because I wasn't too excited for it, to be honest. Enjoyment, 4 and 5, between
really?
2. Yeah. Yeah, I really was sitting there, you know, just even if it was just my couch, I was still really into it. And in retrospect, a strong 4, I would say.
Mm.
There are definitely moments that could be better, but it's really strong.
David?
Probably say Anticipation 4, because I can. When it came out in the US, it got some really strong reviews.
Yeah,
and,
true.
You know, I didn't love Ex Machina, but I thought it was good and I was really excited. And I love Dread, though. Mm. Absolutely love Dread.
I love Dread.
So it's a kind of 3-4 boundary for me. It was like, I really admired it without ever thinking I really love this.
If there was a 3.5, this would be where you'd use 3.5.
Probably, yeah.
Okay.
That's where I'd break that out.
Okay. Yeah, I wasn't a massive fan of Ex Machina, but I really enjoyed this. And I'd probably go a little bit more fractal, maybe 3.75.
It's what Garland would want.
I suppose so.
It's a kind of melding of numbers that's not quite one or the other.
We all like this, which you can't say about every film that we've all seen. And the critics in the States love this, and it's a big film with a big cast. Why has it not been given a cinematic release in Europe, do you know?
Well, it's just too weird.
Is that right?
I think that there is a lot of kind of rank and file kind of multiplex cinema goers who would probably go and see this film and just be like, what, you know, it doesn't have
but
that.
Loads of weird stuff gets a release. I mean, Mother.
Yeah,
I think Mother is maybe a reason why they don't want to do that with this one.
Why?
Because
it bombed.
Mother
are the same studio as well, Paramount.
Yeah. So I think what happened is that obviously this film, Annihilation, cost a lot to make. And so that's already a lot of money spent. And then they try and release it in the US, and that clearly is not really paying off. And so now they don't want to waste any more money. But it does feel really lazy, because their job is to release films in cinemas. So they're always a risk to release films. But
yeah, guys.
I think it's really sad. But
it does set a bad precedent as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you know,
that's my fear.
Interesting studio movies.
Yeah.
You know, is the Netflix dollar going to be too hard to resist?
Yeah. Mm. And I've also seen some takes on Twitter saying, oh, well, you can complain that it's not in cinemas, but because it's on Netflix, everyone can watch it. I don't think the average Netflix watcher is going to watch more than 10 minutes of this, because it's so weird. That's the point.
Do you think?
I think it might.
Have you seen the kind of stuff
people.
They put on Netflix?
Yeah, but what I mean is that people stop watching things on Netflix. They don't finish them.
Do you think?
And I think if you know, the point of going to the cinema is that you have to sit there.
I don't know that this is that different to some of the kind of sci-fi series that you'll find on Netflix in terms of its kind of slightly kooky starting point and an exploration. I don't know. I mean, I'm delighted that it's it's finding a big audience. Alex Garland says one of the big pluses of Netflix is the fact that he doesn't get stressed about if people are going to turn up for the opening weekend and what that then will imply for its future prospects.
I'm so sad for
but
him.
But he says it was a disappointment. Anyway, do see it on Netflix.
Yeah.
And
tell your friends
it's interesting
to watch
that everyone like.
Now that's interesting. If people watch it on Netflix, does that justify the studio's decision then?
Well, I don't know.
Usually, we go and see films at preview screenings, and then we go back to our office, and everyone's sort of asking what we've seen. And with Annihilation, everyone saw it on Monday night. Everyone came back into the office, and everyone was talking about Annihilation.
Oh, really?
So it has almost got
we should
that
have made
kind
it
of
our film club this week,
like water cooler element to But it's just a one day. You know, how long will it last?
How long is Netflix going to last? You know?
Forever.
I don't know.
No, Netflix, I refuse to believe that.
Netflix is the shimmer.
Wow. And
that
there
is
you have
so
it.
True, actually, if you think about it.
There was a move, and this is a slight digression, but there was a move a year or two ago to start releasing films online, streaming them on the day of release in cinema to give basically people the choice who had bad speakers and buffering at home to go and spend the dollar to see them elsewhere.
I think Amazon does something strange like this, where sometimes they first release the film in cinemas and then also on Amazon Prime, but maybe either the same day or a bit later.
Right.
So
the Square is that, I think. Square will be in cinemas and you can get it on the Curzon thing.
Okay. Right. Film Club is Street Fighter. Will there ever be another film club? I don't know.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at UH1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
It's going to be hard to top Street Fighter, which features Jean-Claude Van Damme and Kylie Minogue together at last as various characters from the video game Street Fighter. Colonel Guile and various other martial arts heroes fight against the tyranny of dictator M. Bison. Here is Chun-Li as Ming-Na Wen, meeting up with N-level boss Bison, played by Raul Julia.
My father was the village magistrate. A simple man with a simple code, justice. He gathered the few people that he could to stand against you. You and your bullies were driven back by farmers with pitchforks. My father saved his village at the cost of his own life. You had him shot as you ran away. A hero at 1,000 paces.
I'm sorry. I don't remember any of it.
You don't remember?
For you, the day Bison graced your village was the most important day of your life. But for me, it was Tuesday.
David, you're a massive fan of this film.
Yes.
Which was in no way... which was totally coincidental with it being selected. Because this was actually the listener's nomination when we were asking what's been the best video game adaptation, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say I was a massive fan.
Oh, really? No?
I mean, I didn't, like, before I rewatched it, I probably wasn't. But now.
Now.
I'm still not, but.
But more than you
yeah,
were.
Yeah, more than I were.
Okay,
yeah.
So were there people who were really into this film?
Yeah, the question that was put out to our readers was, what is the best computer game adaptation?
Mm.
And I mean, obviously, we found out that it's actually the new Tomb Raider. See earlier discussion.
Yeah.
But what we've got here, I'll read out a couple. Mm-hmm. Tom Joyce says, I seem to remember that the Silent Hill film with Rada Mitchell and Sean Bean was pretty decent. I've
is
seen
he dying,
that. It's terrible. Max Payne is easily one of the worst films I've endured.
Uh-huh.
Liam Delaney, Raul Julia was transcendent as Bison.
Street Fighter.
The film didn't know what they had with him while suffering from terminal cancer too. We'll go into that in more detail, but this is maybe one of the great swan song performances from Raul Julia. Mm. Mark Sadler, according to review aggregator Metacritic, it's Mortal Kombat. It's a shame that all the good source material has not resulted in a decent movie. Don't stop them from trying, though.
Right.
I think it's a great film.
Okay, so I didn't see it. And should I?
You should definitely see it.
Really?
Absolutely.
Why?
Because it's a romp and it's a video game movie in the best sense, in that it understands that video games are about action.
Mm-hmm.
It's terrible. I would say.
Well, yeah, but that's what I meant.
It's like it's so shambolic and terrible, but it's very enjoyable.
How is Kylie Minogue's the iconic Cammy?
Well,
is she iconic?
Yeah. To Street Fighter players, I believe so.
Oh, so sorry, I do not play Street Fighter. Mm-hmm. That is something I will correct.
I was Tekken actually.
Ah, Tekken Man.
Yeah, they never made a movie of that.
I think they've made animated movies on it.
Okay, good. Yeah.
But they.
She's fine.
It's interesting in the film because they, in the first like 2 or 3 minutes, they take great pains to assure the slavish Street Fighter 2 fans that every single one of their favorite characters is going to be in it. So you get this kind of short introduction of, oh my God, there's that guy and there's that guy.
Mm-hmm. Did you play Street Fighter?
I did as a little.
And you were satisfied by that intro, were you?
Yes, I was. I was thinking back to how I would have felt when I was like 12 or whatever. And I think I would have been satisfied back then. But one of the other things to note, which is I found fascinating, and I think is up there on the screen, is that the director and writer Stephen A. D'Souza of Commando fame.
Oh,
he wrote
Schwarzenegger.
Yeah. He wrote the script in a night.
Uh huh.
Because
let's go and make a movie.
The executives from Capcom apparently.
This is a bit like the Disaster Artist.
Yeah.
Right?
So the executives from Capcom were apparently they were coming to America, and they brought their meeting forward. So he was like, "Oh, I need to get a script ready for them for when they arrive."
Uh-huh.
So he dashed it off in a night. And gave it to them, and they were
containing gems such as for me that was Tuesday.
Yeah. It's shot in like Australia. And that's why Cammy is in it. That's why Kylie is in it as a kind of contractual obligation because they got Australian money and shot on location in Australia.
Oh, so, I see.
So it was like, well, to do that, you have to cast an Australian. Why not the most famous Australian?
Yeah.
It's also shot weirdly in Myanmar, which is like the very contentious place now where there is a genocide happening.
Yeah.
And, you know, there is, and apparently when they were filming, it was still an area where there was, you know, there was sort of military issues and sort of discord. So I read this thing about there's a big bit at the end of the film where they attack M. Bison's base and they decide to attack it with boats. It's like, why would you do that? Because he's put landmines in the river that leading up to his base. So why would you not just get in helicopters? Mm-hmm. And apparently that was like a kind of decision made by the production because helicopters were being shot out of the sky in that area.
Yeah, that would be a problem.
So yeah, they were like, well, we just have to like rewrite this. So they're going in these like cool stealth boats now.
Gotta do what you gotta do.
Wow.
No.
So Raul Julia then.
Oh, he's so wonderful.
Please, go talk about Raul Julia.
I love Raul Julia. Raul Julia is... It would be weird to say that he's underrated because I think people who watch movies love him all the time. So obviously he's more famous for the Addams Family. But in this film, which is his swan song, he's terrific. He plays the villain, Bison, who is basically a sort of Hitler version, you know. He's called Bison, which is a beautiful name. And he his performance is very interesting because it is hammy in the sense that it's very intense and very, you know, as you expect a fascistic villain to speak, but it still feels completely honest. He was so talented and he really brings so much to the film. I think when he delivers that line saying it was Tuesday, he means every word, and it's so thrilling to watch him. It's astonishing.
It is like he's doing Hamlet. Like, I mean, it almost feels that this is his big moment.
Mm. And
that
he's, it's crazy.
It feels like he didn't make that many films. I'm trying to think, what, Moon Over Parador, Kiss of the Spider Woman.
That was his. I think he got an Oscar for that, or an Oscar nomination. That Kiss of the Spider Woman was the big one. He was in some Clint Eastwood movies as well, as kind of more sort of stock villains. But
I think he was such a unique actor that it probably is why he wasn't in that many films. But every film he was in, even this one, he managed to make amazing.
And he made it with, you know, he had like stomach cancer as he was doing it. And he, you know, you see the film, he doesn't look well.
And he's having to fight
against Jean-Claude Van Damme. You know, it's like,
it's really,
and he did it because his kids, it was one of, it, apparently his kids loved the game and insisted that he did it. And he did it as a kind of like final thing, and he died before it came out, and the film's dedicated to him. So
at the end, it says, "Yeah, for him." No, I think he's really great, and it's interesting actually to compare his performance to Jean-Claude Van Damme's, because one thing about Van Damme that I found watching this film, I have to say, I have not seen that many Van Damme, but I'm gonna catch up because this was great. Van Damme is also very sincere.
Your funeral.
I'm ready.
Sincere.
I think he's very sincere, as in, he knows what he's there for, you know, and he's very dramatic. He's very cool, and basically he's bad, but he believes in it so much that it becomes almost good.
I see.
Well, it's one of the really things talent. As well, apparently, yeah. Just last little tidbit here. To get Van Damme, they basically spent like half the entire budget. That's why all the other characters are like unknowns.
Oh,
because apart from Kylie and Raoul.
Apart from Kylie and Raoul Julia, yeah.
Wow. Just thinking, this is the second film we've got featuring JC this week. Okay.
JC. Oh my God. Also, another thing that I realized when watching Tomb Raider, to go back, is that at some point, Dominic West gets his beard cut, and he's old and he has long hair, and he looks so much like Van Damme in all those 90s films.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
And I was like, this is ridiculous. That has to be on purpose. And I want to put it out there that I believe that this haircut is Dominic West trying to be Van Damme in
a homage,
1990s films.
Okay.
So if the director is out there,
right? Okay.
Let me know.
Stephen E. D'Souza, please make yourself known. Yeah. All right, well, there you go. That was Street Fighter. And Lord knows what's going to follow that in our film club next week. David, have we decided? This is usually the bit where we suddenly realise we haven't actually worked out what film it's going to be.
Well, one of the films we're talking about...
Is it Sonic the Hedgehog?
No. There isn't a Sonic film, alas.
What?
We're going to be talking about a film called Unsane next week, which is a new film by Steven Soderbergh, and it's a kind of woman in peril thriller set
in
an insane asylum.
Or is she in danger?
Is she insane?
Is she not insane, or is she unsane?
Who knows?
Right.
And so we're actually going to sort of switch things up after the fun we've had with Street Fighter, and actually do an old film, George Cukor film, Gaslight, which
wonderful.
Is a kind of gothic thriller. I mean, it's a while since I've seen it, but I remember absolutely loving it.
The film which has spawned the contemporary term gaslighting.
Indeed.
But actually, it's not that film. It's the one before, because that's a remake.
Oh, yeah. The one we're doing is the remake. I think there was one from like 2 years before or something.
Was the original one an early Hitchcock one?
I don't think it's Hitchcock. I think it's 1934 or something. It's a few years before, and it's really good.
Okay. No. I have a feeling that he did a film called Gaslight in the 30s in England.
I don't think so.
No?
Definitely
not. Rebecca.
Rebecca's a great shout though, because that's another story.
It is, yeah.
But anyway, okay, Gaslight. There you go. All right, so we're also doing Unsane, which looks dead scary, and A Wrinkle in Time, Disney's new release.
Yep.
And Have a Nice Day, which is deceptively polite of title.
Yes. Chinese animation, independent. You don't get much of that around these days.
Indeed. All right. Well, do have a watch of Gaslight, the Cuckoo version, and let us know your thoughts by email, if you like, truthofmovies@tcolondon.com, on Twitter @LWLies, all the usual places, Facebook and The Wall. Anything else you'd like to mention, Manuela, before we depart?
Go see Phantom Thread if you haven't yet.
Okay, yeah.
That's what I say. And go see You Were Never Really Here, because this is really terrific. That's it.
Yeah.
And watch Annihilation on Netflix and tell your friends. And, you know, it might give money to Netflix, but you got to watch it for Alex Garland.
Okay.
Just a very, very quick thing at the end to say. I can't remember if it was mentioned next week, but there is a new issue of a fine publication out at the moment.
Little White Lies.
It's called Little White Lies.
What's the cover story?
The cover film is a film called Isle of Dogs, which is the new film by Wes Anderson.
Yeah. You guys probably saw. I saw last week.
Yes.
Yeah. I have not seen yet.
Have you not seen it yet?
And we've talked to the big man himself, Wes Anderson.
Jesus?
Not Jesus. And so
Can we use any of that in this? Did you record it at all, the conversation?
Well, Sophie did it on the phone
as
he was on a train through the Swiss Alps, which is very Andersonian, I think.
Yeah, that is.
But lots of great stuff in there, and that's all good news agents right now. So pick it up.
Excellent. All right. That is it then for today. Thank you everyone very much for listening. We'll be back with those aforementioned movies. In the meantime, this has been a 7 Digital production.